This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Slade House by David Mitchell. Read for you by Thomas Judd and Tanya Rodriguez.
The Right Sort, 1979. Whatever Mum's sayings drowned out by the grimy roar of the bus pulling away, revealing a pub called the Fox and Hounds. The sign shows three beagles cornering a fox. They're about to pounce and rip it apart. A street sign underneath says Westwood Road. Lords and ladies are supposed to be rich, so I was expecting swimming pools and Lamborghinis. But Westwood Road looks pretty normal to me. Normal brick houses, detached or semi-detached, with little front gardens, and normal cars. The damp sky's the colour of old hankies. Seven magpies fly by. Seven's good. Mum's face is inches away from mine, though I'm not sure if that's an angry face or a worried one. Nathan, are you even listening? Mum's wearing makeup today. That shade of lipstick's called Morning Lilac, but it smells more like Pritstick than lilacs. Mum's face hasn't gone away, so I say, what? It's pardon or excuse me, not what. Okay, I say, which often does the trick. Not today. Did you hear what I told you? It's pardon or excuse me, not what. Before that, I said, if anyone at Lady Grayer's asks how we came here, you're to tell them we arrived by taxi. I thought lying was wrong. There's lying, says Mum, fishing out the envelope she wrote the directions on from her handbag, which is wrong, and there's creating the right impression, which is necessary. If your father paid what he's supposed to pay, we really would have arrived by taxi. Now, Mum squints at her writing. Slade Alley leads off Westwood Road about halfway down. She checks her watch. Right, it's 10 to 3, and we're due at 3. Chop, chop, don't dawdle. Off Mum walks. I follow, not stepping on any of the cracks. Sometimes I have to guess where the cracks are, because the pavement's mushy with fallen leaves. At one point, I had to step out of the way of a man with huge fists jogging by in a black and orange tracksuit. Wolverhampton Wanderers play in black and orange. Shining berries hang from a mountain ash. I'd like to count them, but the clip-clop, clip-clop of Mum's heels pulls me on. She bought the shoes at John Lewis's sale with the last of the money the Royal College of Music paid her, even though British Telecom sent a final reminder to pay the telephone bill. She's wearing her dark blue concert outfit and her hair up with the silver fox-head hairpin. Her dad brought it back from Hong Kong after World War II. When Mum's teaching a student and I have to make myself scarce, I sometimes go to Mum's dressing table and get the fox out. He's got jade eyes, and on some days he smiles, on others he doesn't. I don't feel well knitted today, but the Valium should kick in soon. Valium's great. I took 2 pills. I'll have to miss a few next week, so Mum won't notice her supplies going down. My tweed jacket's scratchy. Mum got it from Oxfam specially for today, and the bow tie's from Oxfam too. Mum volunteers there on Mondays so she can get the best of the stuff people bring in on Saturdays. If Gaz Ingram or anyone in his gang sees me in this bow tie, I'll find a poo in my locker, guaranteed. Mum says I have to learn how to blend in more, but there aren't any classes for blending in, not even on the town library notice board. There's a Dungeons and Dragons club advertised there, and I always want to go, but Mum says I can't because Dungeons and Dragons is playing with dark forces. Through one front window, I see horse racing. That's Grandstand on BBC One. The next 3 windows have net curtains, but then I see a TV with wrestling on it. That's Giant Haystacks, the hairy baddie, fighting Big Daddy, the bald goody, on ITV. 8 houses later, I see Godzilla on BBC Two. He knocks down a pylon just by blundering into it, and a Japanese fireman with a sweaty face is shouting into a radio. Now Godzilla's picked up a train, which makes no sense, because amphibians don't have thumbs. Maybe Godzilla's thumb's like a panda's so-called thumb, which is really an evolved claw. Maybe. Nathan! Mum's got my wrist. What did I say about dawdling? I check back. Chop, chop! Don't dawdle. So what are you doing now? Thinking about Godzilla's thumbs. Mum shuts her eyes. Lady Grayer has invited me, us, to a musical gathering, a soiree. There'll be people who care about music there. People from the Arts Council. People who award jobs, grants. Mum's eyes have tiny red veins like River's photograph from very high up. I'd rather you were at home playing with your Battle of the Boers landscape too, but Lady Greya insisted you come along, so you have to act normal. Can you do that? Please? Think of the most normal boy in your class and do what he'd do. Acting normal's like blending in. I'll try, but it's not the Battle of the Boers. It's the Boer War. Your ring's digging into my wrist. Mum lets go of my wrist. That's better. I don't know what her face is saying. Slade Alley's the narrowest alley I've ever seen. It slices between two houses, then vanishes left after 30 paces or so. I can imagine a tramp living there in a cardboard box, but not a lord and lady. No doubt there'll be a proper entrance on the far side, says Mum. Slade House is only the Greyers' town residence. They're proper homes in Cambridgeshire. If I had 50p for every time Mum's told me that, I'd now have £3.50. It's cold and clammy in the alley, like White Scar Cave in the Yorkshire Dales. Dad took me when I was 10. I find a dead cat lying on the ground at the first corner. It's grey like dust on the moon. I know it's dead because it's as still as a dropped bag, and because big flies are drinking from its eyes. How did it die? There's no bullet wound or fang marks, though its head's at a slumped angle, so maybe it was strangled by a cat strangler. It goes straight into the top five of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Maybe there's a tribe in Papua New Guinea who think the droning of flies is music. Maybe I'd fit in with them. Come along, Nathan. Mum's tugging my sleeve. I ask, shouldn't it have a funeral, like Gran did? No, cats aren't human beings. Come along. Shouldn't we tell its owner it won't be coming home? How? Pick it up and go along Westwood Road, knocking on all the doors, saying, excuse me, is this your cat? Mum sometimes has good ideas. It'd take a bit of time, but... Forget it, Nathan. We're due at Lady Greya's right now. But if we don't bury it, crows will peck out its eyes. We don't have a spade or a garden round here. Lady Greya should have a spade in a garden. Mum closes her eyes again. Maybe she's got a headache. This conversation is over. She pulls me away, and we go down the middle section of Slade Alley. It's about five houses long, I'd guess, but hemmed in by brick walls so high you can't see anything, just sky. Keep your eyes peeled for a small black iron door, says Mum, set into the right-hand wall. But we walk all the way to the next corner, and it's 96 paces exactly, and thistles and dandelions grow out of cracks, but there's no door. After the right turn, we go another 20 paces until we're out on the street parallel to Westwood Road. A sign says Cranberry Avenue. Parked opposite's a St. John ambulance. Someone's written, clean me in the dirt above the back wheel. The driver's got a broken nose, and he's speaking into a radio. A mod drives past on a scooter like off Quadrophenia, riding without a helmet. Riding without a helmet's against the law, I say. Makes no sense, says Mum, staring at the envelope. Unless you're a Sikh with a turban, then the police'll... A small black iron door. I mean, how did we miss it? I know. For me, Valium's like Asterix's magic potion, but it makes Mum dopey. She called me Frank yesterday, Dad's name, and didn't notice. She gets two prescriptions for Valium from two doctors, because one's not enough, but... A dog barks just inches away, and I've shouted and jumped back in panic and peed myself a bit. But it's okay, it's okay, there's a fence. And it's only a small yappy dog, it's not a bull mastiff. It's not that bull mastiff. And it was only a bit of pee. Still, my heart's hammering like mad, and I feel like I might puke. Mum's gone out into Cranberry Avenue to look for big gates to a big house, and hasn't even noticed the yappy dog. A bald man in overalls walks up, carrying a bucket and a pair of stepladders over his shoulder. He's whistling, I'd like to teach the world to sing, in perfect harmony. Mum cuts in. Excuse me, do you know Slade House? The whistling and the man stop.
Do I know what house?
Slade House. It's Lady Nora Greya's residence.
No idea, but if you find her ladyship, tell her I fancy a bit of posh if she fancies a bit of rough.
He tells me.
Love the dicky bow, son.
And turns into Slade Alley, picking up his whistling where he left off. Mum looks at his back, muttering, thanks a heap for bloody nothing.
I thought we weren't supposed to say bloody.
Don't start, Nathan, just don't. I think that's Mum's angry face.
Okay.
The dog stopped yapping to lick its willy.
We'll backtrack, Mum decides. Maybe Lady Greya meant the next alley along.
She goes back into Slade Alley and I follow. We reach the middle section in time to see the stepladder man vanish around the corner of the far end, where the moon-grey cat's still lying dead.
If someone killed you down here, I remark, nobody'd see.
Mum ignores me. Maybe it wasn't very normal. We're halfway down the middle bit when Mum stops.
I'll be jiggered.
There's a small black iron door set into the brick wall. It's small, all right. I'm 4 feet 11 inches, and it's only up to my eyes. A fat person would need to squeeze hard to get through. It has no handle, keyhole, or gaps around the edges. It's black. Nothing black, like the gaps between stars.
How on earth did we miss that? Says Mum.
Some Boy Scout you are.
I'm not in the Scouts anymore,
I remind her. Mr. Moody, our Scoutmaster, told me to get lost. So I did, and it took the Snowdonia Mountain Rescue Service 2 days to find my shelter. I'd been on the local news and everything. Everyone was angry, but I was only following orders. Mum pushes the door, but it stays shut.
How on earth does the bally thing open?
Perhaps we ought to knock. The door pulls my palm up against it. It's warm. And as it swings inwards, the hinges shriek like brakes. And we're looking into a garden. A buzzing, still summery garden. The garden's got roses, toothy sunflowers, spatters of poppies, clumps of foxgloves, and lots of flowers I can't name. There's a rockery, a pond, bees grazing, and butterflies.
It's epic. Cop a load of that, says Mum.
Slade House is up at the top, old, blocky, stern and grey, and half-smothered by fiery ivy, and not at all like the houses on Westwood Road and Cranberry Avenue. If it was owned by the National Trust, they'd charge you £2 to get in, or 75p for children under 16. Mum and I have already stepped in through the small black iron door, which the wind closed like an unseen butler, and currents are pulling us up the garden, around by the wall.
The Greyers must have a full-time gardener, says Mum,
or even several of them. At last, I feel my valium kicking in. Reds are glossier, blues glassier, greens steamier, and whites see-through like one layer of a 2-ply tissue. I'm about to ask Mum how such a big house and its garden can possibly fit in the space between Slade Alley and Cranberry Avenue, but my question falls down a deep well with no bottom, and I forget what I've forgotten.
Mrs. Bishop and son, I presume, says an invisible boy.
Mum jumps, a bit like me with the yappy dog, but now my valium's acting like a shock absorber.
Up here,
says the voice. Mum and me look up. Sitting on the wall, about 15 feet up, I'd say, is a boy who looks my age. He's got wavy hair, pouty lips, milky skin, blue jeans, pumps, but no socks, and a white T-shirt. Not an inch of tweed, and no bow tie. Mum never said anything about other boys at Lady Greya's musical soiree. Other boys mean questions have to get settled. Who's coolest? Who's hardest? Who's brainiest? Normal boys care about this stuff, and kids like Gaz Ingram fight about it.
Mum saying, "Yes, hello, I'm Mrs. Bishop and this is Nathan. Look, that wall's jolly high, you know. Don't you think you ought to come down?"
"Good to meet you, Nathan," says the boy.
"Why?"
I ask the soles of the boy's pumps. Mum's hissing something about manners, and the boy says,
"Just because. I'm Jonah, by the way. Your welcoming committee."
I don't know any Jonas. It's a maroon-coloured name. Mum asks,
"And is Lady Nora your mother, Jonah?"
Jonah considers this.
"Let's say she is, yes."
"Right," says Mum.
"That's, I see. Oh, splendid, Rita, you found us."
A woman walks out from a lattice-framed tunnel thing. The tunnel's smothered with bunches of dangly white and purple flowers. The woman's around Mum's age, but she's slim and less worn down and dresses like her garden looks.
"After I hung up last night, I rather got the collywobbles that I'd horribly confused you by giving you directions to the Slade Alley door. Really, I should have sent you round the front. But I did so want your first sight of Slade House to be across the garden in its full splendour."
"Lady Greya!"
Mum sounds like an imitation of a posh person.
Good afternoon. No, 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 your directions were...
Call me Nora, Rita, do. The whole lady thing's a frightful bore when I'm off duty.
Oh, you've met Jonah, I see. Our resident Spider-Man.
Lady Greya has Jonah's black hair and X-ray vision eyes that I prefer to look away from.
This young man must be Nathan.
She shakes my hand. Her hand's pudgy, but its grip's strong.
Your mother's told me all about you.
Pleased to meet you, Nora,
I say, like a grown-up from a film.
Nathan,
says Mum, too loud. Lady Greya didn't mean you can call her by her Christian name.
It's fine, says Nora Greya.
Really, he's welcome to.
The bright afternoon sways a bit.
Your dress matches the garden,
I say.
What an elegant compliment,
says Lady Greya.
Thank you. And you look very smart too. Bow ties are terribly distinguished.
I extract my hand.
Did you own a moon grey cat, Nora?
Did I own a cat?
Do you mean recently or in my girlhood?
Today. It's in the alley.
I point in the right direction.
At the first corner. It's dead.
Nathan can be rather direct sometimes. Mum's voice is odd and hurried.
Nora, if the cat is yours, I'm terribly...
Don't worry. Slade House has been catless for some years. I'll telephone our odd job man and ask him to give the poor creature a decent burial pronto.
That's most thoughtful of you, Nathan.
Like your mother. Have you inherited her musical gift, too?
Nathan doesn't practice enough, says Mum.
I practice an hour a day,
I say.
Ought to be two,
says Mum crisply.
I've got homework to do, too,
I point out.
Well, genius is nine parts perspiration,
says Jonah, standing right behind us on the ground. Mum gasps with surprise, but I'm impressed.
I ask, how did you get down so quickly?
He taps his temple.
Cranially implanted teleport circuitry.
I know he jumped, really, but I like his answer better. Jonah's taller than me, but most kids are. Last week, Gaz Ingram changed my official nickname from Gaylord Baconface to Poison Dwarf.
An incurable show-off, sighs Nora Greya.
Now, Rita, I do hope you won't mind, but Yehudi Menuhin's dropped by, and I told him about your Debussy recital. He's positively bursting to meet you.
Mum makes a face like an astonished kid from Peanuts.
The Yehudi Menuhin? He's here, this afternoon.
Lady Greya nods like it's no big deal.
Yes, he had a gig at the Royal Festival Hall last night, and Slade House has become his London bolt-hole come pied-à-terre, as it were.
Say you don't mind? Mind,
says Mum.
Meeting Sir Yehudi... Of course I don't mind, I just can't quite believe I'm awake.
Bravissima!
Lady Greya takes Mum by the arm and steers her towards the big house.
Don't be shy, your hoodie's a teddy bear. Why don't you, chaps,
she turns to Jonah and me,
amuse yourselves in this glorious sunshine for a little while. Mrs. Polanski's making coffee eclairs, so be sure to work up an appetite.
Eat a damson, Nathan,
says Jonah, handing me a fruit from the tree. He sits down at the base of one tree, so I sit down against its neighbour.
Thanks.
Its warm, slushy flesh tastes of early August mornings.
Is Yehudi Menuhin really visiting?
Jonah gives me a look I don't understand.
Why on earth would Nora lie?
I've never met a boy who calls his mum by her Christian name. Dad'd call it very modern.
I didn't say she is lying. It's just that he's an incredibly famous virtuoso violinist.
Jonah spits his damson stone into tall pink daisies.
Even incredibly famous virtuoso violinists need friends. So how old are you, Nathan?
13?
Bang on.
I spit my stone farther.
You?
Same,
he says.
My birthday's in October.
February.
I'm older, if shorter.
What school do you go to?
School and I never saw eye to eye,
says Jonah,
so to speak.
I don't understand.
You're a kid. You have to go. It's the law.
The law and I never got on either.
Another damson?
Thanks.
But what about the truancy officer?
Jonah's face may mean he's puzzled. Mrs. Marconi and me have been working on puzzled.
The what, officer?
I don't get it. He must know.
Are you taking the piss?
Jonah says,
I wouldn't dream of taking your piss. What would I do with it?
That's kind of witty, but if I ever used it on Gaz Ingram, he'd crucify me on the rugby posts.
Seriously, I'm taught at home.
That must be ace. Who teaches you? Your mum?
Jonah says, our master,
and looks at me. His eyes hurt, so I look away. Master's like a posh word for teacher.
What's he like?
Jonah says, not like he's trying to boast,
a true genius.
I'm dead jealous, I admit. I hate my school. Hate it.
If you don't fit into the system makes life hell. Is your father a pianist too, like your mother?
I like talking about Dad as much as I hate talking about school.
No, Dad lives in Salisbury, but Salisbury in Rhodesia, not Wiltshire. Dad's from there, from Rhodesia, and he works as a trainer for the Rhodesian army.
Lots of kids tell fibs about their dads, but I'm not. My dad's an ace marksman. He can put a bullet between a man's eyes at 100 meters. He let me watch him once.
He let you watch him put a bullet between a man's eyes?
It was a shop dummy at a rifle range near Aldershot. It had a rainbow wig and an Adolf Hitler moustache. Doves or pigeons coo in the damson trees. No one's ever very sure if doves and pigeons are the same bird or not.
Must be tough, says Jonah, your father being so far away.
I shrug. Mum told me to keep shtum about the divorce.
Have you ever visited Africa?
Asks Jonah.
No, but Dad promised I can visit next Christmas. I was meant to go last Christmas, but Dad suddenly had lots of soldiers to train. When it's winter here, it's summer there.
I'm about to tell Jonah about the safari Dad's going to take me on, but Mrs. Marconi says talking's like ping pong. You take turns.
What job does your dad do?
I'm expecting Jonah to tell me his father's an admiral or a judge or something lordly, but no.
Father died. Shot. It was an accident on a pheasant shoot. It all happened a long, long time ago.
Can't be that long ago, I think. But I just say, right. The purple foxgloves sway like something's there.
But there isn't. And Jonah says, tell me about your recurring nightmare, Nathan.
We're sitting by the pond on warm paving slabs. The pond's a long rectangle, with water lilies and a bronze statue of Neptune in the middle gone turquoise and bruised. The pond's bigger than our whole garden, which is really just a muddy yard with a washing line and rubbish bins. Dad's lodge in Rhodesia has land going down to a river where there's hippos. I think of Mrs. Marconi telling me to focus on the subject.
How do you know about my nightmare?
You have that hunted look, says Jonah. I lob a pebble up, high over the water. Its arc is maths.
Is your nightmare anything to do with your scars?
Immediately, my hands pulled my hair down over the white and pink streaked area below my right ear to hide where the damage shows the most. The stone goes plop, but the splash is invisible. I won't think about the mastiff launching itself at me, its fangs pulling skin off my cheek like roast chicken, its eyes as it shook me like a doll. Its teeth locked around my jawbone, or the weeks in hospital, the injections, the drugs, the surgery, the faces people make, or how the mastiff's still waiting for me when I fall asleep. A dragonfly settles on a bulrush an inch from my nose. Its wings are like cellophane, and Jonah says,
its wings are like cellophane.
And I say, I was just thinking that. But Jonah says,
just thinking what?
So maybe I just thought he'd said it. Valium rubs out speech marks and pops thought bubbles. I've noticed it before. In the house, Mum's playing warm-up arpeggios. The dragonfly's gone.
Do you have nightmares?
I ask.
I have nightmares, says Jonah, about running out of food.
Go to bed with a packet of digestives, I tell him. Jonah's teeth are perfect, like the smiley kid with zero fillings off the Colgate advert.
Not that kind of food, Nathan.
What other kinds of food are there? I ask. A skylark's Morse coding from a far, 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 far star.
Food that makes you hungrier, the more of it you eat, says Jonah.
Shrubs tremble blurrily like they're being sketched in.
No wonder you don't go to a normal school, I say. Jonah winds a stem of grass around his thumb. And snaps it. The pond's gone and we're under a tree. So obviously it's another stem of grass, a later snap. The valium's throbbing in my fingertips now, and the sunlight's a harpist. Fallen leaves on the shaved lawn are shaped like tiny fans.
This tree's a ginkgo tree, says Jonah. Whoever lived at Slade House half a century ago planted it.
I start arranging ginkgo leaves into a large Africa, about 1 foot from Cairo to Johannesburg. Jonah's lying on his back now, either asleep or just with his eyes closed. He hasn't asked me about football once, or said I'm gay for liking classical music. Maybe this is like having a friend. Time must have passed, because my Africa's finished. I don't know the time exactly, because last Sunday I took my watch apart to improve it, and when I put it back together again, some pieces were missing. Not quite like Humpty Dumpty. Mum cried when she saw the watch's insides, and shut herself in her room so I had to eat cornflakes for tea again. I don't know why she got upset. The watch was old, dead old, made long before I was even born. The leaves I removed for Lake Victoria, I use for Madagascar.
Wow,
says Jonah, leaning his head on an elbow. Do you say thanks when someone says wow? I don't know, so I play safe and ask, do you ever think you might be a different species of human, knitted out of raw DNA in a laboratory, like in the island of Dr. Moreau, and then turned loose to see if you can pass yourself off as normal or not? Gentle applause flutters down from an upstairs room.
My sister and I are a different species, says Jonah. But the experiment part is redundant. We pass ourselves off as normal, or anything we want to be. Do you want to play Fox and Hounds?
We walk past a pub called the Fox and Hounds.
It's been there since the 1930s. Smells like the 1930s too, if you ever go in. My sister and I borrowed its name for a game. Want to play? It's a race, basically.
I didn't know you had a sister.
Don't worry, you'll meet her later.
Fox and Hounds is a race. We start off at opposite corners of the house. We both shout, Fox and Hounds, 1, 2, 3! And on the three, we start running anti-clockwise until one of us catches the other. The catcher is the hound, and the one who's caught is the fox. Simple. Up for it? If I say no to Jonah, he might call me a wuss or a spazzo.
Okay, but shouldn't it be called Fox and Hound if there's only one hound?
Jonah's face goes through two or three expressions I can't read.
Henceforth, Nathan, it'll be known as Fox and Hound.
Slade House looms up. The red ivy's redder than red ivy normally is. The ground floor windows are too high off the ground to see inside. And anyway, they only reflect the sky and clouds.
You stay here, Jonah tells me at the front right corner. I'll go round the back. Once we start, run anti-clockwise, up this way.
Off Jonah trots down the side of the house, which is walled by a holly hedge. While I'm waiting, I notice someone moving in the window nearest to me. I step closer, peering up. It's a woman. Another guest at Lady Nora Grey's soiree, I suppose, or maybe a servant. She's got one of those beehive hairstyles that ladies on Dad's old LPs had. Her forehead's furrowed, and her mouth slowly opening and closing like a goldfish. Like she's repeating the same word over and over and over. I can't hear what she's saying because the window's shut, so I tell her, I can't hear you. I take a step forwards, but she vanishes, and there's only reflected sky. So I take a step back, and she's there again. It's like one of those pictures you get in cereal boxes, where it looks like the image is moving when you tilt it slightly. The beehive woman could be saying, no, 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 or go, go, go. Or it might be, oh, oh, oh. But before I work it out, I hear Jonah's voice down the holly path saying, ready, Nathan? I shout, ready. And when I look back at the window, the beehive woman's gone. And I can't get her back wherever I stand or however I tilt my head. I take up my starting position at the corner.
Fox and Hound!
Calls Jonah, and I call it too.
1, 2, 3,
I shout back, and leg it down the holly path. Slap, slap, slap go my shoes, and the echoes whack, whack, whack. Jonah's taller than me, and maybe he beat me over 100 meters, but I could still end up as the hound and not the fox, because it's stamina that counts over long distances,
and I'm at the end of the side path already, where I was expecting a view of Cranberry Avenue, but there's just a long brick wall and fir trees and a narrow strip of lawn that goes by in a blur. I pound along and swing round on a drainpipe, sprint down another chilly side path sliced with blades of light coming through a high fence with brambles poking between the slats. Then I'm out front again, where I smack into a butterfly bush, and butterflies blizzard up all orange and black and red and white, and one goes in my mouth, so I spit it out and I leap over the rockery and nearly trip up when I land, but I don't. Along I run past steps climbing to the front door, past the beehive woman's window, but she's gone now, and then round the corner and I'm pounding back down the echoey holly path, starting to get a stitch in my side, but I'll ignore it, and the holly's scratching the back of my hand like it's pushing in, and I wonder if Jonah's gaining on me, or I'm gaining on Jonah. But not for long, because I'm back at the back of Slade House, where the fir trees are thicker and bigger, and the wall blurrier, and I keep running, running, running round the corner, to where the brambles really are choking through the fence now, scratching my shins, my neck, and now I'm afraid I'll be the fox, not the hound. And round the front the sun's gone in, or gone out, or gone away, and the flowers are withered, and there's not a single butterfly on the butterfly bush, just dead ones smeared into the path, powder paint skid marks with one half-dead one flapping a bit. I've stopped, because the far end of the garden, the wall with the small black door, it's gone all faint and dim. Not because of evening. It can't even be 4 o'clock yet. Not because it's misty, either. I look up. The sky's still bluish, like it was before. It's the garden itself. The garden's fading away. I turn round to tell Jonah to stop the game. Something's wrong. We need a grown-up. Any second now, he'll come hurtling round the far corner. The brambles sway like underwater tentacles. I glance back at the garden. There was a sundial, but it's gone now, and the damson trees too. Am I going blind? I want Dad to tell me it's fine. I'm not going blind. But Dad's in Rhodesia, so I want Mum. Where's Jonah? What if this dissolving's got him too? Now the lattice tunnel thing's erased. What do you do when you're visiting someone's house and their garden starts vanishing? The blankness is moving closer like a storm front. Then, at the far end of the brambly side path, Jonah appears, and I relax for a second, because he'll know what to do. But as I watch, the running boy shape gets fuzzier and becomes a growling darkness with darker eyes, eyes that know me, and fangs that'll finish what they started. And it's pounding after me in sickening slow motion, big as a cantering horse, and I'd scream if I could, but I can't, my chest's full of molten panic. It's choking me, it's choking, it's wolves, it's winter, it's bones, it's cartilage, skin, liver, lungs, it's hunger, it's hunger, it's hunger, and run! I run towards the steps of Slade House, my feet slipping on the pebbles like in dreams, but if I fall it'll have me, and I've only got moments left, and I stumble up the steps and grip the doorknob. Turn, please turn, it's stuck, no, 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 it's scratched gold, it's stiff, it's ridged. Does it turn? Yes, no, yes, no, twist, pull, push, pull, turn. Twist! I'm falling forwards onto a scratchy doormat on black and white tiles, and my shriek's like a shriek shrieked into a cardboard box, all stifled and muted. What on earth's the matter, Nathan? I'm on my bang knees on a carpet in a hallway. My heart's going slap, 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 slap. But it's slowing. It's slowing. I'm safe. And Lady Greyer's standing right here, holding a tray with a little iron teapot on it, with vapour snaking up from the spout. Are you unwell? Shall I fetch your mother? Woozily, I get up. Something's outside, Nora. I'm not sure I understand. What kind of a something? I mean, a kind of what? Dog. Oh, that's Izzy from next door. Daft as a brush, and she will insist on doing her business in the herb garden. It's jolly annoying, but then she's very sweet. No, it was a bigger, and the garden was vanishing. Lady Nora Greyer does a smile, though I'm not sure why.
Fabulous to see boys using their imaginations.
Jonah's cousins kneel before the TV with their Atari thingamies, their bleepy bleepy space games, and I tell them, it's a beautiful day, play outside. And they say, yeah, yeah, Auntie Nora, if you say so. The hallway has black and white tiles like a chessboard. I smell coffee, polish, cigar smoke and lilies. Through a little diamond-shaped window in the door, I peer out and see the garden. It's not at all dissolved. Down the far end, I can see the small black iron door onto Slade Alley. I must have imagined too hard. Down the stairs comes Tchaikovsky's Chant de l'Alouette. It's Mum. Nora Grey asks, Nathan, are you feeling all right? I looked up Valium in a medical encyclopedia at the library, and in rare cases it can make you hallucinate, and you have to tell your doctor immediately. I guess I'm rare. Yes, thanks, I say. Jonah and me were playing Fox and Hound, and I think I got carried away.
I thought you and Jonah might have a rapport.
And golly gosh, Yehudi and your mother are getting on like a house on fire. You go on up to the soiree, up both these flights of stairs. I'll find Jonah, and we'll bring the eclairs. Up you go now. Don't be shy. I take off my shoes and put them side by side and climb the first flight of stairs. The walls are panelled, and the stair carpet's thick as snow and beige like nougat. Up ahead, there's a little landing where a grandfather clock's going crunk, 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 crunk. But first I pass a portrait of a girl, younger than me, plastered with freckles, and wearing a pinafore thing from Victorian times. She's dead lifelike. The banister glides under my fingertips. Mum plays the last note of Chant de l'Alouette, and I hear applause. Applause makes her happy. When she's sad, it's only crackers and bananas for dinner. The next portrait's of a bushy-browed man in a regimental uniform. The Royal Fusiliers. I know because Dad got me a book about British Army regiments and I memorized it. Crunk, 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 goes the clock. The last portrait before the landing is a pinched lady in a hat who looks a lot like Mrs. Stone, our RE teacher. If Mrs. Marconi asked me to guess, I'd say this hat lady was wishing she was anywhere but here. From the little landing, another flight of stairs to my right carries on up to a pale door. The clock's really tall. I put my ear against its wooden chest and hear its heart. Crunk, 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 crunk. It has no hands. It's got words instead, on its old, pale-as-bone clock face, saying, Time is. And under that, time was. And under that, time is not. Up the second flight of steps, the next picture's of a man who's 20 or so, with slick black hair and squinty eyes, and a look like he's unwrapped a present and can't work out what it is. The last but one portrait's a lady I recognise. It's the hair. The lady I saw in the window. Same dangly earrings, too, but a dreamy smile instead of streaky eyeshadow. She must be a friend of the Greyers. Look at that mauve vein in her neck. It's throbbing, and a murmur's in my ear saying, Run now, as fast as you can, the way you came in. And I say, What? And the voice stops. Was it even there? It's Valium. Maybe I shouldn't take any more for a while. Only a few steps to the pale door now, and I hear Mum's voice on the other side.
Oh no, Yehuda, you mustn't make me hog the limelight when there's so much talent in the room.
The reply is too soft to hear, but people laugh. Mum too. When did I last hear Mum laugh like that?
You're all too kind, I hear her say. How could I say no?
Then she starts up, Danseuse de Delphes. I take two or three steps and draw level with the last portrait. Which is me. Me, Nathan Bishop. Wearing exactly what I'm wearing now. This tweed jacket, this bow tie. Only in the picture, I've got no eyes. That's my big nose. The zit on my chin I've had all week, my scarring from the mastiff under my ear, but no eyes. A joke? Is this funny? I never know. Mum must have sent a school photograph, plus photographs of the clothes I was going to be wearing to Nora Grayer, and she got the artist to paint this. How else? This isn't bad Valium, is it? Is it? I blink hard at the portrait, then kick the skirting board. Not hard enough to break my toe. But hard enough to hurt. When I don't wake up, I know I'm awake. The clock's going crunk, 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 and I'm trembling with anger. I know anger when I feel it. Anger's an easy one,
It's like being a boiling kettle. Why did Mum play a joke on me the day she told me to act normal? Normally I'd wait until Debussy was over before opening the pale door, but Mum doesn't deserve manners today, so I put my hand on the doorknob. I sit up in bed. What bed? Not my bed in my titchy room in England, that's for sure. This is three times the size, with sunlight blasting through the curtains and Luke Skywalker on the sheet thing. My head's humming. My mouth's dry. There's a desk, a bookshelf full of National Geographics, strings of beads over the doorway, a million insects outside, a Zulu-style tribal shield and spear decorated with tinsel that brings the answer closer now. Closer. Closer. Dad's lodge in the bushveld. I let out this bark of relief, and all my dream anger at Mum goes, pfft. It's Christmas Eve, and I'm in Rhodesia. Yesterday I flew here on a British Airways flight, all on my own, my very first time on a plane, and asked for the fish pie because I didn't know what bœuf bourguignon was. Dad and Joy met me at the airport in his jeep. On the way here we saw zebras and giraffes. No spooky portraits. No Slade House, no Mastiff. Mrs. Todd's, my English teacher, gives an automatic F if anyone ever writes, "I woke up and it was all a dream," at the end of a story. She says it violates the deal between reader and writer, that it's a cop-out, it's the boy who cried wolf. But every single morning, we really do wake up, and it really was all a dream. It's a shame Jonah's not real, though. I lift up the curtain by my bed and see slopes of woodland and grassland going on forever. Down below's the brown river where there's hippos. Dad sent me a Polaroid of this exact view. It's on my wall at home in England by my pillow. But here, it's the actual view. African birds, African morning, African bird song. I smell bacon and get up. I'm in my Kay's catalogue pyjamas. The pine floor's knotty, warm and grooved on the soles of my feet, and the strings of beads are like lots of fingertips on my face. Dad's at the table, reading his Rhodesian Reporter and dressed in his short-sleeved khaki shirt.
The Kraken wakes.
Dad always says that in the mornings. It's the title of a book by John Wyndham about a monster who melts the ice caps and floods the world. I sit down. Morning, Dad. Dad folds his newspaper.
Well, I wanted to wake you for your first African dawn, but Joy said, no, let the poor lad sleep in. He flew 12 hours non-stop. So we'll do all that tomorrow. Hungry?
I nod. I guess I must be. And Dad tilts his head at the kitchen hatch.
Joy? Violet? Young man needs his chow.
The hatch opens and Joy appears.
Nathan!
I knew about Joy, who Mum calls your father's dolly bird. But it was still a jolt to see Dad holding hands with another woman. They're going to have a baby in June, so they must have had sexual intercourse. The baby will be my half-brother or half-sister, but it hasn't got a name yet. I wonder what it does all day.
Sleep well, says Joy.
Joy's got a Rhodesian accent like Dad's.
Yes, mad dreams, though.
I always have mad dreams after a long-haul flight.
OJ, bacon sandwich, do you, Nathan?
I like how Joy says OJ. Mum would hate it.
Yes, please.
You'll need some coffee too, says Dad.
Mum says I'm too young for caffeinated drinks, I say.
Horse pucky, says Dad. Coffee's the elixir of life, and Rhodesian coffee's the purest on earth. You're having some.
OJ, bacon sandwich and coffee coming up, says Joy. I'll get Violet on it straight away.
The hatch closes. Violet's the maid. Mum often used to shout at Dad,
I'm not your bloody maid, you know, Frank.
Dad lights his pipe, and the smell of his tobacco brings back memories of when he and Mum were married. He says from the corner of his mouth,
tell me about this dream of yours, matey.
The gazelle's head's distracting, and so are Dad's grandfather's muskets from the Boer War and the ceiling fan.
Mum took me to see a lady, like a lord and lady type lady. The house was missing, so we asked a sort of window cleaner man, but he didn't know either. Then we found it. It was this big house like in To the Manor Born. There was a boy called Jonah, but he turned into a big dog. Yehudi Menuhin was there too, and Mum played with him upstairs.
Dad snorts a laugh. And then I saw a portrait of me, but my eyes were missing, and I see a small black iron door in the corner.
That door was there too.
Dad looks round. Dreams do that. Mix reality with moonshine. You were asking about my gunroom door before you turned in last night. Don't you remember?
I must have, if Dad says so. It all felt so real when I was in it.
I know it felt real, but you can see it wasn't, right?
I look at Dad's brown eyes, crinkly lines, tan skin, greyish streaks in his sandy hair, his nose like mine. A clock's going, crunk, 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 crunk. And there's a trumpeting noise outside, not far away. I look at Dad, hoping it is what I think it is.
Dead right, matey. A herd drifted across the river yesterday afternoon. We'll go see him later, but first, line your stomach.
Here we go,
says Joy, placing a tray in front of me.
Your first African breakfast. My bacon sandwich looks epic, with a triple layer of rashers and ketchup dribbling out.
That's God's own bacon sarnie, I say.
Someone said that line on a sitcom I saw once, and lots of people laughed.
Well, aren't you the charmer? Says Joy.
Wonder who you get that from?
Dad puts his arm around Joy's waist.
Try the coffee first. It'll make a man of you.
I lift the mug and peer down. Inside's black as oil, as holes in space, as Bibles.
Violet ground the beans just now, says Joy.
God's own coffee, says Dad.
Drink up now, matey.
Some stupid part of me says, no, don't, you mustn't.
Your mother'll never know, says Dad. Our little secret.
The mug's so wide it covers my nose like a gas mask. The mug's so wide it covers my eyes, my whole head. Then whatever's in there starts gulping me down. Time passed, but I don't know how much. A slit of light opens its eye and becomes a long flame. Cold, bright star white. A candle on a candlestick on the scarred floorboards. The candlestick's dull silver or pewter or lead, and it's got symbols on it, or maybe letters from a dead language. The flame's not moving. It's as if time's unspooled and jammed. Three faces hang in the gloom. Lady Grayer on my left, but she's younger now, younger than Mum. To my right is Jonah Grayer, but he's older than the Jonah in the garden. They're twins, I think. They're wearing grey cloaks with hoods half down. His hair's short and hers is long, and it's gold instead of black like before, and they're kneeling like they're praying or meditating. They're still as waxworks. If they're breathing, I can't see it. The third face is Nathan Bishop's, opposite me. I'm a reflection in a mirror, a tall rectangle standing on the floor. I'm still wearing the tweed jacket from Oxfam and the bow tie. When I try to move, I can't. Not a muscle. I can't turn my head or lift my hand or speak or blink even. Like I've been paralysed. It's scary as hell, but I can't even go, mmm, like scared gagged people do. I'm pretty sure this can't be heaven or hell, but I know it's not Rhodesia. Dad's lodge was a kind of vision. I'd pray it's only the Valium making me see this, but I don't believe in God. I'm in an attic, judging from the sloping ceiling and rafters. Are the Greyers prisoners like me? They look like the Midwich cuckoos. Where's Yehudi Menuhin? All the guests, the soiree? Where's my mum? The flame comes to life, and the symbols on the candlestick change, and keep changing, as if it's thinking fast and the symbols are its thoughts. Jonah Greyer's head shifts. His clothes rustle.
Your mother sends her apologies,
he says, touching his face as if he's testing whether it still fits.
She had to leave.
I try to ask, why? Where? But nothing I need to speak. Jaw, tongue, lips, works. Why would Mum leave without me? The me in the mirror gazes back. Neither of us can move. Nora Greyer's flexing her fingers like she's just waking up. Did they inject me with something?
Every time I come back to my body, she says, it feels less of a homecoming and more like entering an alien shell, a more enfeebled one. Do you know, I want to be free of it.
Be careful what you wish for, says Jonah. If anything happened to your birth body, your soul would dissolve like a sugar cube and
I know perfectly well what would happen.
Nora Greyer's voice is chillier and throatier now.
The hairdresser paid an uninvited visit, I saw.
Jonah asks, What hairdresser are you talking about?
Our previous guest, your honey pie. She appeared in a window. Then, on the stairs, by her portrait, she tried to give some sort of a warning to the boy.
Her afterimage showed up in a window, you mean?
It happens. The girl is gone. As gone as a smoke ring puffed out years ago in a gale off Rockall. It's harmless.
A brownish moth fusses around the candle flame.
They're getting bolder, says Nora Greyer. The time will come when a harmless afterimage will sabotage an open day.
If our theatre of the mind were ever sabotaged and a guest escaped, we'd simply call our friends the Black Watermen to bring them back again. That's why we pay them. Handsomely.
You underestimate ordinary people, Jonah. You always did.
Would it kill you, sister, to once, just once, say, top job, a superb orison. You've landed us a juicy, tenderized soul to pay the power bills for the next 9 years. Bon appetit.
Your African lodge could not have been a cornier ersatz mishmash, brother, if Tarzan had swung in on a vine.
It wasn't supposed to be real. It only had to match the Bushveld the guest imagined.
Anyway, the boy's mentally abnormal. He hasn't even noticed his lungs have stopped working.
Jonah now looks at me like Gaz Ingram does. It's true. I'm not breathing. My switched-off body hasn't raised the alarm. I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
Oh, stop snivelling for Christ's sake, groans Jonah. I cannot abide snivellers. Your father would be ashamed of you. Why, I never snivelled when I was your age.
Never snivelled, snorts Nora. When mother died.
Let's reminisce later, sister.
Dinner is served. It's warm, confused, afraid, it's imbibed banjaks, and it's ready for filleting.
The Greyer twins make letters in the air with their hands. There's a slow thickening in the dark, above the candle, at a little above head height. The thickening becomes a something. Something fleshy, lumpish, fist size, pulsing blood red, wine red, blood red, wine red, faster and faster. The size of a human head, but more like a heart as big as a football, just suspended there. Veins grow out of it, like jellyfish tentacles, and twist like ivy through the air. They're coming for me. I can't turn my head or even shut my eyes. Some of the vein things finger their way into my mouth, others into my ears, two up my nostrils. When I see my reflection, I'd scream if I could, or pass out, but I can't. Then a dot of pain opens up on my forehead. In the mirror, there's a black spot there. Something oozes out and hovers there inches from my eyes. Look, a clear cloud of stars, small enough to fit in your cupped palms. My soul. Look. Look. Beautiful as beautiful. The Greyer twins lean in. Their faces shining like Christmas, and I know what they're hungry for. They pucker up their lips and suck. The round cloud stretches doughily into two smaller round clouds and splits. One half of my soul goes into Jonah's mouth and the other into Nora's. They shut their eyes like Mum did the time we saw Vladimir Ashkenazi at the Royal Albert Hall. Bliss. Bliss. Inside my skull, I howl, and my howl echoes on and on and on and on, but nothing lasts forever. The big beating heart thing's gone, and the Greyer twins are back kneeling where they were before. Time slowed down to nothing. The flames stop flickering. The brownish moth is frozen an inch away from it. Cold, bright, star white. The Nathan in the mirror's gone. And if he's gone, I'm...
Shining Armor, 1988.
Good evening. Here are today's headlines at 6 o'clock on Saturday, October the 22nd. Speaking at a press conference in Downing Street today, the Home Secretary, Douglas Hurd, rejected criticism of the government's ban on broadcast interviews with members of the Irish Republican Party, Sinn Féin. Mr. Hurd said,
I switched off the radio, got out of my car and looked up at the pub. The Fox and Hounds. A memory came back to me, of me and Julie popping in for a drink here one time. We were house hunting, and we'd viewed a place on Cranberry Avenue, one street up. It had sounded all right in the estate agents, but a right bloody shithole it turned out to be. Damp, gloomy, with a garden too small to bury a corpse in. It was so depressing we needed a liquid pick-me-up just to face the drive home. 5 years ago, that was. 5 years, one wedding, one dismal honeymoon in Venice, 4 Christmases with Julie's god-awful pinko tree-hugging relatives, 1,500 bowls of shredded wheat, 250 bottles of wine, 30 haircuts, 3 toasters, 3 cats, 2 promotions, 1 Vauxhall Astra, a few boxes of Durex, 2 emergency visits to the dentist, dozens of arguments of assorted sizes, and 1 beefed-up assault charge later. Julie's still living in our cottage with a view of woods and horses, and I'm in a flat behind the multi-story car park. Mr. Justice Jones said I was lucky I wasn't booted out of the force. Thank God me and Julie had never had kids, otherwise she'd be shafting me for child support as well as compensation for her disfigurement. Grasping bitch. 5 years gone. Blink of a bloody eye. I set off down Westwood Road, eyes peeled. I asked a woman in a miniskirt and a ratty fake fur coat, on the game I'd better tell her, if she'd heard of Slade Alley, but she shook her head and strode by without stopping. A jogger ran past in a blur of orange and black, but joggers are tossers. 3 Asian kids went trundling past on skateboards, but I'd had enough of our curry-munching cousins for one day, so I didn't ask them. The multi-culti brigade bleat on about racism in the force. But I'd like to see them keep order in a town full of everywhere starnies whose only 2 words of English are police and harassment, and whose alleged women walk about in tall black tents. There's more to public order than holding hands and singing Ebony and Ivory. The streetlights came on, and it was looking like it might rain, the sort of weather that used to give Julie her mysterious headaches. I was tired after a long and stressful day, and at the sod this for a game of soldiers stage, and if our chief super was anyone but Trevor Doolan, I'd have buggered off home to the remains of last night's tandoori takeaway, had a laugh at the Sharons and Waynes on blind date, then seen if Gonzo and a few of the lads were up for a pint. Unfortunately, Trevor Doolan is our chief super, and a walking bloody lie detector to boot, and come Monday, he'd be asking me some rectal probe of a question that I'd only be able to answer if I'd really followed up famous Fred Pink's lead. It'd be, "Describe this alley to me then, Edmonds," or some such. With my appraisal in November and the Malik inquiry due to report in 2 weeks, my tongue has to stay firmly up Doolan's arse. So down Westwood Road I trogged, looking left, looking right, searching high and low for Slade Alley. Could it have been blocked off since Fred Pink's day, I wondered, and the land given to the house owners? The council sometimes do that, with our blessing. Alleyways are trouble spots. I got to the end of the road where the A2 skims past a park and dropped my fag down a gutter. A guy with a busted nose was sat behind the wheel of a St. John ambulance, and I nearly asked him if he knew Slade Alley, but then I thought, bugger it, and headed back towards my car. Maybe a swift beer at the Fox and Hounds, I thought. Exorcise Julie's ghost. About halfway back down Westwood Road, I happened upon an altercation between a 5-foot-nothing traffic warden and 2 brick shithouses at least 18 inches taller, wearing fluorescent yellow jackets and with their backs to me. Builders, I could just bloody tell. None of the trio noticed me strolling up behind them. "Then your little notebook's wrong." Builder One was prodding the traffic warden on the knot of his tie. "We weren't here until after 4, get it?"
"I was here,"
wheezed the traffic warden, who was the spit of that Lech Wałęsa, that Polish leader, but with an even droopier moustache.
"My watch."
"Your little watch is telling you porkies," said Builder Two.
The traffic warden was turning pink.
"My watch is accurate."
"I hope you're a good performer in court," said Builder One, "'cause if there's one thing juries hate more than traffic wardens, it's short, little Napoleon privatised traffic wardens."
"My height's nothing to do with illegal flaming parking."
"Oh, the F-word," said Builder Two. "Verbal abuse, that is. And he didn't call me sir once. You're a disgrace to your clip-on tie."
The traffic warden scribbled on his ticket book, tore off the page, and clipped it under the wiper of a dirty white van they were standing next to.
"You've got 14 days to pay or face prosecution."
Builder One snatched the parking ticket off the windscreen, wiped it on his arse, and scrumpled it up.
"Very tough," said Lech Wałęsa. "But you'll still have to pay.